Hello. It's February 13th, 2025. My name is Simone, and this is 90s Crime Time. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time. And if you're new to 90s Crime Time, welcome to the show. Like always, I hope you all have had a great week so far and are looking forward to the weekend. And I'm kind of excited about today's episode, even though it is about an unfortunate crime. Today's story has to deal with a love gone wrong scenario. Now, for those of you who have followed along with 90s Crime Time for a while, you all know that I like to do Love Gone Wrong episodes on or around my birthday. However, it's not my birthday. It is the day before Valentine's Day. So I thought I would be a little messy by premiering a Love Gone Wrong murder case. Also, if you stay tuned all the way until the end, you'll find out another reason why I'm excited about premiering this Love Gone Wrong case. I'll go ahead and warn you, though, that this case will talk a little about substance abuse and a little about mental health and suicidal thoughts. Therefore, listener's discretion is advised. And with that, let's dive in to today's Love Gone Wrong story. The year was 1995, and in the capital city of Austin, Texas, this city was known, at least back then, for its laid-back vibe. The city was surrounded by live music, the sound of many scooters zooming by, and with many locals and visitors alike never finding a dull moment here. Reports state that people in Austin could find interest from the iconic 6th Street bars to the peaceful shores of Lady Bird Lake. Or if shopping was their thing, you could catch shoppers at one of Austin's many indie shops. Austin's food scene around this time was also starting to rise, with their famed barbecue, late-night meals that included Tex-Mex dishes, and their rise in the food truck business. And speaking of live bands, around this time, Austin was known as the live music capital of the world. Bars and venues like Antone's, the Continental Club, and Stubbs Barbecue hosted live shows almost every night, blending the sounds of blues, rock, country, and the emerging indie scene. However, many locals and visitors also liked the club scene of Austin, as it was vibrant, diverse, and filled with energy. And around this time, one Austin resident spent many nights in the club scene during this time, becoming a regular. She spent so many nights around the scene that when her life was tragically cut short that summer in 1995, it would leave many people wondering who would do this to such a vibrant woman and why. In the following case, you'll find out who the woman was, the investigation, and very shocking aftermath in a case I title Burning Rage. On the afternoon of June 30th, 1995, Austin resident Jeremy Barnes went to his friend Regina Hartwell's home to clean her apartment. He wasn't a professional cleaner, but he knew Regina wasn't the tidiest woman, and she knew this too, so she paid him to clean up her place from time to time so he could earn extra money. She also asked him to clean up for her that week because she had company coming in town and wanted to spruce things up at her place. When Jeremy arrived, though, not only was he there to clean, but he was also looking for his cooking pot he let Regina borrow so he could cook his meals again. Reports state that when he entered her apartment, she wasn't home, but her place was filthy, with beer bottles spread across the floor, ashtrays overflowing with ash and cigarette butts, animal waste from her dogs, and much more. However, when he noticed Regina's dog's bowls were empty, he thought that was strange, as she loved her dogs and would call and ask a friend to feed them if she was out. So Jeremy took it upon himself to feed them without her asking, then left to resume cleaning the next day. When the next day, July 1st, rolled around, Jeremy went back to Regina's apartment, and he still didn't see her. But he noticed that again her dogs hadn't been fed. So he fed them and went into her bathroom to clean it. When he entered the bathroom, reports state he noticed several tiny spots of blood throughout the room, but thought nothing of it because he knew that Regina unfortunately had a drug problem and blood was an occurrence. However, after he cleaned up the blood in the bathroom, he noticed more blood in the living room, the kitchen, and hallway. Jason was angry as he thought Regina should have done a little something to the place before he got there as a courtesy. But by this point, though, he had an inkling that something was wrong. He hadn't seen or heard from Regina in a few days. Her dogs hadn't been tended to, and she hadn't paid him for his services. And by the time July 2nd came with no word from her, Jason really became worried. Even more so when other friends of Regina reached out to him asking if he'd seen her. As days went on, Jason held off a little on cleaning Regina's home until she contacted him, but he continued to tend to her dogs. However, reports state that on July 5th, as he went to feed the dogs, he noticed that Regina's caller ID had missed calls from the local police department. At first, he was relieved, as crazy as it sounds, because he thought she'd been arrested and that it was her calling him to bail her out. However, when he called Bastrop County Sheriff's Department and asked for Regina Hartwell, the officer asked who he was and said that name matched with the burned Jeep that was found. Startled, Jason wanted to know more about the burning car, and the officer then told him they had found a body inside. And days later, police confirmed to Regina's friends, including Jason, that after comparing the burned body with dental records, they confirmed that the victim was 25-year-old Regina Hartwell. According to reports, Regina Stephanie Hartwell was born on February 6, 1970, as an only child to Mark and Antoinette, nicknamed Tony Hartwell, in Pasadena, Texas. Mark worked as an aircraft mechanic, and Tony worked as a cleaner at an aviation company at an airport in Houston. Growing up, Regina had a turbulent childhood as she felt abandoned by her father, who worked a lot and was out of the home due to his schedule. And even though she considered Tony her best friend as a child, she also had a testy relationship with her mother, as Tony suffered from multiple sclerosis, and reports state she often took out her frustrations with pain on her daughter. Tony would reportedly let out her cigarettes on Regina's back, and when Regina got on her nerves, she would make her suffer. One report states that once, when Regina wanted to eat watermelon, Tony got so mad that she kept asking to eat some. She made her eat an entire watermelon in one sitting until she literally passed out. However, despite the abusive situations, Regina was said to have adored Tony and helped her with her MS struggles. But then, by 1982, when Regina was just 12 years old, her world turned upside down. Reports state that on April 22, 1982, Tony finished her shift at the airport, and when she went to leave, she went through the door when a co-worker who didn't see Tony released a portion of a hangar door that was close by. And it crushed Tony to death, devastating Regina. After the accident, Mark sued the aviation company, and the family was rewarded $2 million by 1986, with Mark giving himself $1.6 million and Regina receiving $400,000 placed in a trust, with the deal that she would receive $40,000 of that trust when she turned 18, receive various amounts for the following years, and would receive the rest of what was left when she turned 25. After the settlement, though, Regina was still grieving, and even worse for her was when Mark remarried and moved out of the house, leaving the now 16-year-old Regina by herself. Her neighbors, with whom she was close, thought this was a bad idea and called CPS on Mark. However, they determined Regina was mature for her age, had a stable home to live in, and had enough money to take care of herself. Regina, though, didn't quite know what to do with all the money she had, especially since Mark felt guilty about his actions and showered her with gifts, including a Porsche. So she did what she thought was best, which was to share her wealth with others, even if they weren't really her friends. Reports state Regina would let many of her classmates and fellow neighborhood teens drive the Porsche, and she would give them expensive gifts. Diving into more of her personal life, Regina did have some legitimate friends. But as she became an older teen, she decided to dabble into her love life some. Reports state that Regina talked to some boys around town, but never really made a connection. However, according to a report, when she talked to an older sister of a close friend, she felt a bond she had never felt before. And when she came across other women she was attracted to, she came up with the conclusion that she was gay. Even though Regina was comfortable with her sexuality, she wasn't comfortable expressing herself and being out as a lesbian in conservative Pasadena, Texas, and decided it was time for another change, and moved to the big city of Austin. When she got to Austin, reports state Regina felt alive. She could be who she wanted to be and live her life open and proud. After all, Austin was known as a very welcoming city for members of the LGBTQ+ community, and the city was home to many venues for the community to party and socialize. Regina was said to have made herself known at many of these venues, and like in Pasadena, she continued to seek out lovers to mate with and to shower them with gifts as an act of love and to receive the love back, even if it always wasn't sincere. However, reports state that even though Regina was living it up in Austin, she was still suffering from tremendous grief and depression. And by the time she moved, she had dabbled a lot in drugs to try and mask her pain. Regina was said to have known how to get the best drugs with her money. And she even bought drugs for some friends, and they partied hard together. Meanwhile, though, Regina was still looking for love, someone to finally be in a relationship with. And as luck would have it, reports state that at a 4th of July party in 1994, she came across a slender blonde beauty named Kim LeBlanc, who was 18 years old. According to reports, Kim LeBlanc was born Kimberly Alex Derrick on August 20th, 1977, in Houston, Texas. Later in her childhood, though, Kim's mother married a man named Ken LeBlanc, and he adopted and raised her, and her last name was changed to his. Kim's parents eventually moved to Travis County, Texas, aka Cowboy Country, and Kim was said to have had a fairly typical upbringing. However, reports state that as Kim reached her tween and teenage years, she told her friends that Ken was inappropriate with her several times and allegedly told Kim that if she said anything to her mom may leave him. But she still needed him financially for herself and Kim. So Kim apparently kept the abuse to herself and only told close friends. But also during this time, she tried to ignore her home troubles, kept her grades decent in school, and focused on her friends. Also around this time, she became a popular cheerleader at school, and reports state that by the time she reached her senior year, just like Regina, she began to experiment with drugs, with ecstasy being her drug of choice. However, she only used it from time to time. After she graduated in 1994, she was accepted into the University of Texas at Austin. But before she left school, she shocked her friends and family by chopping off her long blonde hair into a bob. Just like Regina, though, again, Kim felt free with her move to Austin and her haircut, and explored the town, just like Regina, to see who she could meet and flirt with. And when Kim met Regina that night, she wasn't really into her. She just flirted with her a bit. But Regina was almost immediately smitten. She liked Kim's looks and personality. But since Kim didn't reciprocate the feelings, she wanted to get to know her better anyway and invited her out to hang with her friends. In the weeks after they started hanging out, Kim reiterated to Regina that she wasn't into women, and Regina seemed okay with that. But secretly, she saw getting Kim as a challenge. So she did what she did best and bought things for Kim to try and woo her. Reports state Regina bought Kim lavish gifts, took her on trips, let her use her ATM card, and after some time, she paid Kim's rent. And Kim took everything Regina had to offer, without anything in return, to the dismay of Regina's other friends, as they thought Kim was taking advantage of her. Even Regina was starting to get frustrated with Kim. She wanted Kim for herself, but Kim still didn't reciprocate. So she came up with one last idea, to feed drugs to Kim. Regina knew that Kim dabbled a bit with ecstasy, and so she bought some for her, and then more for Kim, until Kim seemed dependent on the drug, and her inhibitions were down. Meaning with the pill, she became infatuated personally and sexually to Regina. According to reports, by late 1994, Kim finally gave Regina what she wanted from her, and that was sex. The women were said to have sex all the time, and Regina loved it. Kim was in it for the drugs and gifts. Not only that, though, but unbeknownst to Regina, who told almost anyone that she and Kim were a couple, Kim told people that they were only dating and weren't having sex. Reports also state that after a while, Kim became disillusioned with her quote-unquote situationship with Regina, and she felt smothered and trapped. For example, when Regina took Kim on a trip to New York, while Regina was excited to be there with Kim, Kim was said to have frequently lashed out at Regina, telling her how she felt, and confessed to not being a lesbian, and that she wasn't in love with her, and she asked her for some space. Regina felt crushed and backed off a little, but after a while, she wanted Kim back and dangled drugs, money, and gifts in her face to woo her back. Of course, Kim took the gifts, but by the fall of 1994, she was still not into Regina like that, and felt she was missing something. And what was she missing? Well, reports state that even though she was Regina's quote-unquote sugar baby, she had a part-time job at a local gym, and one day in early 1995, a new, tall, and muscular employee who was a new trainer at the gym walked in the door, and his name was Justin Thomas, age 23. According to reports, Justin Thomas was originally from California, but like Regina and Kim, he too had a turbulent childhood. His mother was said to have suffered from extreme mental issues and suicidal thoughts, and his father dabbled in drugs. Growing up, he too was introduced to drugs by his father, and started first by smoking marijuana. But as he grew older and his circle grew, he graduated to harder drugs. Justin also moved around quite a bit with his family, including to Oregon and Texas. And when he became an adult, Justin ventured out on his own, meeting friends throughout the country. And while he still dabbled in drug use, he was also reportedly starting to sell drugs and became a prominent dealer in the underworld. Reports state Justin eventually settled in Austin in late 1994 and got a job at the gym, but still sold drugs on the side. Back at the gym, even though Kim had seen Justin before, one day when he walked in for a shift in 1995, she thought he looked good, felt a spark, and smiled at him. Justin was said to have smiled back at her, and then they struck up a conversation. Reports state they became attracted to each other, so much so that Kim invited him to party at her place, which Regina was paying for. And when he accepted her invitation, they partied hard by taking some drugs and having sex. Even worse, Justin became so infatuated with Kim that just like Regina, he introduced her to more drugs, including crystal meth, in which he dealt as well. Reports state that when Kim got a hit of the meth, she fell more in love and lust with Justin, and it seemed as if Regina was an afterthought. However, Kim wanted to let Regina know the truth about her relationship with Justin, and let her know she was seeing him. According to reports, Regina seemed to be okay with this when she was around Kim. But around her friends, she was livid and obsessed with trying to get her back. However, she had to play her cards right and suggested to Kim that maybe all three of them should hang out, platonically. Kim thought it was odd, but agreed, but she let Justin know that she was no longer sexual with Regina. She was just simply taken care of by her and could not risk cutting off her money supply. And Regina had something for them both, which was drugs. She was able to supply drugs to them, and she was said to have helped Justin sell around town as well. Justin, on the other hand, wasn't too thrilled with Kim's ex, Regina, around, but he liked that she could help him make drug profits. However, when he learned that Kim was hooking back up with Regina to get what she wanted, it made him livid, and he confronted Kim about it. Kim said it was only business, but that wasn't good enough for Justin, and he wanted in on the action, meaning a threesome. However, when Regina heard about what Justin wanted, she scoffed at the idea, as she refused to have sex with a man, making Justin even more upset and making her an official enemy of his. However, Regina continued to help Justin do business with the drugs, and she still tried to get Kim back to herself, and she even took her on a trip for Kim's 19th birthday in 1995. However, reports state the trip was a bust as the two women kept arguing, so much so that Kim told her it was officially over, and that she could keep her money, and that she was moving back home. Regina was thrown for a loop, and by this point, she had had enough, and told Kim if she left, she was going to turn Justin into the police. However, even though she told Kim this, Regina too also had thoughts of leaving the drug life behind, and even told her close friends this. Her friends seemed happy for her, and many of them wanted to support her as much as they could, especially since she was excited about her upcoming 4th of July get-together. But when her body was found in her Jeep that same week, it shocked her friends and those who knew her, and they wanted to know what happened and why. Well, reports state that once Regina's remains went to the medical examiner's office, the examiner determined her cause of death had been by stabbing. After learning this, detectives got a search warrant for Regina's apartment, and they also called Jeremy over for questioning. When they all got to the apartment, Justin told them he had cleaned up a lot of Regina's apartment because he didn't know it was a possible crime scene. However, when detectives went into the apartment, they did notice that the place seemed clean. But when they turned the lights off and used a product called Luminol to test for any blood stains or other bodily fluids, the apartment lit up like a Christmas tree, as it was covered in blood. Now detectives knew that this was where Regina was killed. When they questioned Justin and other friends of Regina, they all said that they needed to look at her ex, Kimberly LeBlanc, and Kim's new flame, Justin Thomas, who they barely knew anything about. They said they needed to look at them because Regina and Kim had a bad breakup and made it known that she was jealous and not a fan of Justin. Reports also state that when detectives tracked Kim and Justin down at Justin's apartment on the outskirts of Austin, they looked a mess. They were disheveled, gaunt, and were in a drug-induced haze. When they sobered up a little, though, Kim held nothing back and told detectives about her and Regina's relationship and how she was annoying and pushy, especially after Kim broke up with her. She also talked about how Regina threatened to turn Justin into police after the breakup, and that after the threat, she was under so much pressure that she told Justin what Regina said she was scared that he and her could possibly go to jail, and wanted him to try and fix the situation. Kim then said Justin told her he would fix the problem completely, and that on the morning of June 29th, he snuck into Regina's apartment and saw she was sleeping. He then stood over her, and Regina slowly woke up and noticed him. She asked him what he was doing, but then Justin held her down and stabbed her with a knife multiple times as she screamed. Kim then went on and said that after Regina was dead, Justin said he put her body in her tub so the blood would drain, and then rolled her body in a comforter, put her body in her Jeep, and then drove the Jeep to Kim's apartment. They then came up with the plan to drive to a remote area in the county and set the Jeep on fire with Regina's body inside, desecrating her. And after a months-long investigation, eventually both Kim and Justin were arrested for Regina Hartwell's murder. Still, Kim was later offered a plea deal and immunity if she testified against Justin, and she agreed. When Justin's trial began in August 1996, Kim told the jury what she told detectives, and eventually, Justin Thomas was found guilty and sentenced to life for the murder. However, his legal troubles were not over, as reports state he had a warrant for his arrest back in California for his involvement in a 1992 murder of his hired meth dealer, because he was afraid he was going to turn him into police as well. Justin eventually stood trial for that case and was sentenced to death. After Kim's immunity, reports state her charges were dropped, she changed her name, and her whereabouts are unknown. The story of the murder of Regina Hartwell comes from the sources of Austin American Statesman, the Austin Chronicle, the Toronto Sun, and others I'll put in the notes. Okay, so that one was a lot. I know, like most of the 90s crime time stories, this Love Gone Wrong story was really bad and horrendous. And I'm just going to give a very, very, very short opinion piece because I think the episode was long enough. And I know some of you think I rant, so I'll be short. But first, I think this is all just messy. No love triangle is good. None of them are good. People are bound to be jealous. There's one main target usually. And in this case, it was Kim. They both wanted Kim. Regina dangled drugs and money in front of Kim. Justin had sex and drugs to try to handle Kim. Then in the end, Kim, I guess, chose herself. And she was like, I'm not going to jail or prison. So she turned on her partner, Justin. And then Justin ended up going to death row for another case back in 92. And it was very sad for, in my opinion, for Regina to meet that end, because I know that she used her money and drugs to try to woo people, try to buy her friends, buy her relationships, and buy Kim, which she pretty much did. You know, her mom died in a tragic accident back in the 90s when she was a teen. She, you know, said her mom was her best friend, but, you know, as I mentioned, she had an abusive mother who was sick. I'm not justifying her abuse, but she was sick, and she Regina unfortunately got the brunt of her mood swings and illness, and that was still her mom. And you know, even though she got the money, she didn't know what to do with it. If I was 16 and had all that money, even if it was a trust or a Porsche or whatever, I would just be, I don't know, reckless, I think. She was just looking for love, in my opinion, in all the wrong places. And I think had she, you know, had time to mature more, Regina, she would have, you know, maybe opened her eyes to see that Kim didn't really love her. And, you know, she was buying her friends, which is never a good idea, because if the money ran out, they would probably more than likely run away too. I'm not saying she didn't have any real friends, because apparently she did in Austin, but she was known to buy the drinks, the drugs, the friendship. And, you know, she met a sad end because all she wanted was love from Kim, and Kim didn't give that to her. And she was like, I'm going to prison. Justin can go to prison, and she has to do something about it. And I'm just kind of confused why Kim got off so easily. I guess they know that Justin was the one who stabbed Regina. And I don't know if they both lit the Jeep on fire or what, but I think Kim should have done some time. Now, granted, if I had a plea deal, I would take it too. I'm not going to, you know, say I wouldn't, but I do think Kim should have gotten something like Justin did. Maybe not life, but, you know, she should have gotten some time, in my opinion. And she didn't, and Regina met a sad end due to their actions. And wherever Kim is now, I hope she stayed out of trouble. You know, maybe she's thriving, I don't know. But like I said, I still think she should have, you know, done some time for what happened to Regina, because I do not think Justin planned that alone with burning her, burning Regina's remains up. And who knows, Kim could have had something to do with the murder as well. Because she said that she wanted to fix the situation about Regina. I don't know if that meant kill or what, but I don't think Kim is as innocent as people think. But like I said, she got a plea deal and she was offered that. And yeah, she got away with it for the most part and got to change her name and leave and start over. And Justin is where he is. Last time I checked, he was on death row. I could be wrong, but I think he's still on death row for that 1992 murder of his meth dealer who he thought was going to turn him into police. I don't know where that came from. Maybe it was paranoia from the drugs. I don't know, but that's where he was last time I checked. And even if he got off death row, he would still be serving life in Texas for Regina's murder. And that's it. Thank you for tuning in to this Love Gone Wrong tale just in time for Valentine's Day. If you liked what you heard and haven't done so already, I would love for you to leave a rating and or a review if wherever you listen to podcasts has a rating system. Again, I do try hard to bring you all decent content that hopefully interests you. You can also check out 90s Crime Time on social media, primarily on Instagram, where I post other 90s stories mostly on the weekend. Lastly, my special announcement as to why I'm excited I premiered this episode is because I will be bringing back my old podcast titled Love Triangle Murders sometime this weekend, and after its re-release, new episodes will be released every other Friday, and I can't wait for those of you who listened to the show to hear it again. It's going to be good. This episode with Regina Hartwell's murder is going to be the first episode, and I'll also be posting old episodes of, well, previous episodes of the show if you remember the show and listened to it. Again, it's going to be re-released sometime this weekend with Regina Hartwell's murder premiering on the show. Again, yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be good. And with that, stay safe and healthy. Look out for new episodes of Love Triangle Murders this weekend. And I'll see you soon for a brand new episode of 90s Crime Time.